Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag, talking all things college football championship. I would say Saturday, but we do have a game on Friday night that we will cover as well. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my colleague and the one doing the heavy lifting around here, Payne Insider. So what's a good word down in Miami, Payne? Are you going to be donning Hurricanes turnover chains if Miami is the team from Florida getting into the college football playoff over your beloved Florida State Seminoles?
You're trying to fire me up first thing in the morning.
I am. I'm trying to push your buttons. Is it working?
No. Listen. Nothing I said was inaccurate. We saw that last week unfold. I think Miami's obviously a year ahead of schedule. Big test this week. Professionals are having their say. We'll see what Miami does with it.
I just figured you'd be up in Tallahassee this week helping pack Jimbo's bags to send him off to College Station.
That will be interesting to see things, how they unfold. And I know he is a man that likes resources and looks like about a 45% pay increase there. He's going to be able to tell those rich oil miners, hey, I want this, and it's going to happen in a few days. Yeah, if you are an Oregon fan, I would be paying close attention to this.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get into that domino, but little to say, if you're sitting up there in the oasis known as Eugene, Oregon, you have to be on pins and needles, knowing that when some of these dominoes start to fall, your program may be in search of a new man to lead the ship. But we'll get into some of those coaching props. As always, on a Wednesday, we have Dave Mason from betonline.ag to join us. Also, special guest Booger McFarland of ESPN fame to help us break down some of the big matchups. To all those folks tuning in as part of the Outkick the Coverage Network, subscribe to the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And Payne, with Championship Saturday, we're going to have four top 10 matchups for the first time in the history of this particular format. More or less three de facto play-in games. We can call the Big Ten game as such. If we think Ohio State can win and get in, Wisconsin wins, we know they're going to be included. When you saw the unveiling last night, I don't think there was any surprises that Clemson, Auburn, and Oklahoma were 1-3. But the pecking order thereafter was Wisconsin at 4, Bama 5, Georgia 6, Miami 7, and Ohio State 8. Does it lead you to believe that Alabama has an inside track or that Ohio State could leapfrog them if they look good in upending the Badgers this weekend in Indianapolis?
It certainly says a lot in terms of how the committee thinks of Alabama and Ohio State. And I proposed this question to you 2 weeks ago because I saw this unfolding exactly as it is. And it's going to come down to Ohio State in their conference championship game. And there is going to be recency bias, obviously, right? You have 13 human beings in a room. They're going to think different things. If Ohio State goes out there and wins 60-0, and that's the last thing you saw of them, maybe they sneak in, or you're going to have some people and say, hey, we still think Alabama deserves to be in here. It's Nick Saban. Give them a run at it. And they're likely, we have them, power rated the number one team in the country, so I'm not going to disagree with them being included in it. But this is what we're going to face. It's got to be impressive from Ohio State, I think.
Where do you come down on that side of the fence? I mean, we obviously want the best teams in the mix. We know this is about a lot more than what takes place on the field. The big name brands get the additional boost. But with Ohio State having two losses, a conference champion versus Alabama, I've said this, and it's probably a little bit unfounded, but I'm going to continue to say it. I honestly believe when the committee looks at the potential for some of these teams coming in, there is a legitimate fear in that room that if you have an SEC champ, you have Alabama, you have Clemson, and you have Oklahoma, college football on January 1st becomes a very regionalized game, and they lose a lot of the rating dollars without a West Coast representative, the Pac-12 not going to be in the fold like we had last year with Washington, and really no Midwest team. It becomes a Southern game. I think there's a legitimate fear amongst that committee that they could get Alabama against Clemson in a national championship championship type scenario, and you're going to have very real fatigue of seeing those two teams yet again.
It's possible. I mean, they've been great matchups the last 2 years, so who wouldn't want that again? But I completely get it. Listen, college sports now are all about money. So they're going to figure out a way to kind of cover the most they can throughout the country. Ohio State has gotten in the last few years, questionable things. They seem to fall their way. For me, I want the best team in, so I think that's Alabama. I think there's also, when I look at this, and it's probably what confuses a lot of our listeners, I can have two hats. I can say, listen, this is the team that's most deserving based on resume, based on what they've done. And then I can also tell you, listen, this is where we would have these teams power rated. And I've been asked this question all year with Miami. It's like, where do you have them power rated? It's like, not the top 10, not the top 10. This team right now, I think we have them 15th in the power rating. So that's one avenue of it. We're eventually going to 8 teams here. And I
think
that's
I think it's a foregone conclusion. Yeah, it is. I would not be shocked if we saw a scenario where we went to 6 first.
See, that would make more sense to me, right? Go to 6, give the top 2 teams a bye. Then you're going to have people fighting about who is most deserving of the 1 and 2 seed. And once you go to 6 or once you go to 8, you would hope that's where it concludes. But then you're going to have teams 9 and 10 saying we deserve to be in. And so hopefully this gets nipped in the bud at some point and we don't see, you know, 64 teams. That just makes it ridiculous. But hey, money rules the roost. We'll see what happens here. There is a member of the committee from Ohio State. Let's see if that plays a role here. And for me, when I looked at these and ultimately, if I was in that room to answer your question at the end, it would have to be Alabama. It would have to be. I know the schedule, they don't have a ton of great wins. I can't get the Iowa loss out of my head. I can't get this young team that is Jekyll and Hyde out of my head for Ohio State. I just can't. And when you look at Alabama, I know what the scoreboard said. They went on the road. It's an extremely tough environment, one of the toughest in all of football. But again, the metrics we look at, a lot of yards per play, is about a dead even ballgame.
The argument that I have the most problem with, and I've read it from a couple prominent journalists, saying that Alabama needs to root for Auburn to win to have a better case because Georgia beating Auburn diminishes what Alabama accomplished. I think that is one of the most asinine thought processes and statements that you could possibly make. You know what Alabama is. I don't think anything that we're going to see unfold this weekend really changes that dynamic. And as we go through all this stuff to try and see these scenarios play out, I'm with you. I want the best teams there unless you've done something to completely remove yourself from the equation. And the final question I'll ask you, and I didn't, you know, obviously broach this beforehand, so you don't have a number, not that big a deal. Alabama, Ohio State this weekend on a neutral field. What do we make Alabama? No man's land, about a 5-point favorite, or you make it a little bit higher than that?
Ooh, no, that's a little high, actually.
Okay.
And it's weird from this perspective. The power number that I would make and that a lot of our guys produce that they provide sports books that the rest of the world has a chance to bet into, says this number would be, and it's crazy.
Oh, I know what my bookmaking number is. That's why I wanted to ask you what you'd open the number if it was your sports book.
So, yeah, it would be much higher. So just purely power number, it says Alabama should be about a 2.5-point favorite. As crazy as that sounds, now I would love to bet that number.
But you're running over men, women, and children to bet them faster than you tried to get down to Fresno State last weekend.
Exactly. So it's such a tough dynamic for me because I know what the metrics say. I know that's how we produce our number, but then there is an eye test to this. There is a matchup test to this, and that's how we find an edge, right? That's the biggest thing as a sports bettor. Like, hey, will you put up a number? Let's find an edge. We talked about it a little bit on Monday, and it kind of stunned me, right, when we were talking about the Seattle game on Sunday Night Football. I'm like, man, that's a bad number. And then I look at our power numbers, which basically some of those guys use to feed sports books their opening numbers, and you're like, oh shit, that looks actually like a good number. And the market just takes off.
And you know what the irony is, and we'll obviously hit on that game in greater detail on the NFL version of the Bet the Board podcast tomorrow. The number's right back at 6, where we thought it probably could have been from a bookmaking standpoint. So always fascinating to see these kind of things unfold. We'll get into some of the biggest games, obviously, break these down in greater detail. But to do so, we have a man who lives and breathes the sport. like to welcome in a man that knows the sport of college football better than Payne or myself ever will. He played his college ball at LSU, first round draft pick into the National Football League, and owns two Super Bowl rings during his illustrious career. You can see his outstanding football work on ESPN, SEC Network, SiriusXM, and follow him on Twitter at ESPNBooger. And Booger, hopefully Payne and I can live up to what you get to deal with on Saturdays talking to Mac and Dari. Dari, about what we've seen so far this college football season.
Yeah, man, it's been fun over the last couple of years working with Dari, and now getting the chance to work with Kevin and Mac. It's been really good. I'm very fortunate, man. I just get a chance to talk football, man, and I'd be watching it anyway, so I'm really not working in my mind.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with doing what you love and getting paid for it. We can definitely echo that same sentiment. We know we had kind of the final edition before we'll know ultimately the four teams vying for the college football playoff. Did you see any surprises last night with Alabama slotting at 5, knowing that they're probably in the catbird seat should Wisconsin lose to Ohio State and the rest of the seeds hold?
Well, they seem to be in the catbird seat, but we don't know what's going to go on if Ohio State wins. If Ohio State wins the Big Ten, then I think a lot of people are going to stream that Ohio State would have a conference championship and they should get in. And then some people will say, well, what about the two losses? And they'll tell you, hey, well, what about Auburn? Auburn would have two losses also. So, and a conference championship if they beat Georgia in the SEC. So really not a lot of surprises last night. I think we all knew the four teams that were going to be in the top four, maybe a different order. I think the bigger question was, where was Ohio State and Alabama going to be in reference to each other? And I think last night just showed us that the committee holds Alabama in very high regard.
Where do you come down in that discussion? I mean, if Ohio State goes out there and they beat the Wisconsin Badgers, knocking them from the ranks of the unbeaten, and they don't do it in, you know, ultimately impressive fashion like we saw a couple years ago, but they win the game by double digits, do you think Ohio State deserves inclusion jumping ahead of Alabama, or do you think regardless of what happens in that Big Ten championship, Alabama should have a seat at the table as that fourth team?
Well, I would like to see everything laid out on the table before I kind of make that decision. I think if we just kind of put it in a vacuum and said that, okay, let's say Clemson wins, let's say Auburn wins, let's say Oklahoma wins. So those three teams will be in, and let's say Ohio State wins. So now we're basically looking at Ohio State, Alabama. Let's take a look at also throw in USC. And USC beat Stanford, who's now, I think Stanford is ranked in the top 12 or so now. So I think if you take a look at that, I think there's a conversation to be had among multiple teams. However, I do think when it's all said and done, it will come down to a beauty contest between Ohio State and Alabama. I have a hard time for somebody telling me that a team that was in the top three most of the season from start to finish, lost one game on the road, that they're now not a part of the college football playoff. And so I would probably, in that scenario, put Alabama in. But I'm just one guy. I think when you get 13 people in a room, there's no telling which way the vote's going to go.
And you mentioned Auburn. Obviously, they have their work cut out for them this weekend. Not only does Auburn, take on Georgia, trio revenge scenarios dominated by the home team in the first meeting. But we may as well start in the SEC. I know it's a conference that you know well, where Auburn, for this game at the Georgia Dome, a 2-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 48. Booger, can you walk us through the thought process maybe from both sides? Auburn, obviously, fresh off two dominating wins in the past 3 weeks and the ability to duplicate that effort. Meanwhile, Georgia, we know they've had this game circled. I'm sure they've been itching to get a rematch given how poorly they performed at Jordan-Hare just a few short weeks ago.
Well, I try to cut through for the fans. So to me, this game comes down to one thing. What does Georgia do offensively? Because they've been known as a running team, and they've been a running team all year. If they can't run the football, they're going to struggle moving the ball. And then I think Auburn definitely gets the upper advantage. I think if they can figure out a way to cut Jake Fromm loose, he's the guy who has been given the range ever since Eason got hurt for Georgia to play quarterback. So they've got to cut him loose, because if not, then it's ultimately going to turn out to be the same thing that it was at Jordan-Hare, which is the Auburn front seven will be too much for the Georgia offensive line. And it's as simple as that. They have to come up with a different game plan, because last time I checked, I don't think that Georgia's offensive line got any bigger in the last three weeks, nor do I think they've got any stronger. So they're going to have to figure out an alternative game plan.
Payne, when you look at this game and the way it's changed as far as the number perspective, anything surprise you to see Auburn now, I mean, going from a 3-point home underdog to being installed as a 2.5-point favorite on what we're going to call a neutral, but could ultimately work out to be a little bit of home field advantage for the Georgia Bulldogs?
It's a pretty steep.
No, not really, because I think when you look at it, man, I think the neutral side, the playing the team twice is going to come into effect. I think also you got to give Kirby Smart a lot of credit as far as coming back in a rematch game, and can he come up with a different game plan? So, no, I'm not surprised at all about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting when you see kind of the market adjusting for these kind of scenarios. There's no doubt about it. When we talk about some of the comments made, and then we can kind of move forward from this game, Booger, I mean, as a player, Gus Malzahn comes off the field and he makes the comment, you know, we whipped the dog crap out of him. How much does motivation play a role in Georgia's focus and preparation? Or is that something that you've seen in the past, having been in these kind of scenarios, that can actually work against the team if they come into a revenge scenario a little too emotional and jacked up?
Well, I'm sure it'll be good fodder and good bulletin board material. But let me tell you something. When you get hit in the mouth in the first play, all that goes out the window. So you can talk about, you know, the talk and what was said. And the one thing about all of that is it's not going to really play a factor once you get hit. And I think that's ultimately going to determine the game. And I think that, you know, as fans and players, and we all pay attention to what everybody says. But does it really matter? No, not at all.
Well, it'd be an interesting thing for Georgia fans to see if they can kind of flip the script a little bit when we see these teams lock horns over the weekend. Another revenge scenario taking place in Dallas, where it's Oklahoma, a 7-point favorite against the TCU Horned Frogs. Total in this game, 63.5 at betonline.ag. And Booger, obviously, when you talk about Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield is the guy that grabs all the headlines. We've seen Kenny Hill at his best this season for the Horned Frogs. We've seen him struggle mightily. But more importantly, are there things that you've seen the TCU can do differently on the defensive side of the ball in this second meeting that they weren't able to do in Norman when Oklahoma raced out to that massive lead at the half?
Yeah, stop them. Like that's the thing that if I were Coach Gary Patterson, I'd figure out how to do. I think ultimately you have a big play offense in Oklahoma. So what I would try to do is to not give up the big play. Make them drive the football down the field. So play a lot of too high safety, make them run the football over and over, make the offensive line block you 10 to 12 plays at a time. And ultimately, I think that's what you want to do. I go back to when I played for the Buccaneers and we played the St. Louis Rams when they had the greatest show on turf. Our entire game plan was we're not going to give up the big play. We're going to make them drive the football. And we didn't believe that there was a team that could drive it 12 to 15 plays consistently. And we wound up losing, I believe, 12-7, but we kept a team that was averaging 35-12 points. And so I think if you're TCU, you got to slow the game down. You can't beat Oklahoma in a 40-45. I mean, Oklahoma State has a better offense. They tried that. It didn't work. And so I think if you're TCU, you got to slow the game down a little bit.
When you look at TCU's ability to do that, do you worry at all knowing that, you know, they've been without leading rusher Darius Anderson the last couple of games and Kyle Hicks filling in hasn't exactly been electric, 32 carries for 92 yards. Do you think that comes more from what they're able to do schematically on the defensive side or just playing ball control football, trying to establish a ground game and just keeping that high powered Sooners offense on the sidelines?
You know, I think their offense is spread open, Kenny Hill throwing around, running around. That's their offense. They have to do it defensively. Meaning don't give up in a man-to-man situations deep. Make them go 12 to 15 plays. Their offense is their offense. They can't all of a sudden turn into, you know, the old Dallas Cowboys 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They got to play who they are, but I think they can do a good job of it defensively.
It should be an interesting scenario unfolding there as TCU can potentially throw an extra wrench into the college football playoff committee's best laid plans. And one last game we wanted to get your take on in the ACC, where it's Clemson and Miami. We've seen this number really balloon from where it opened. Clemson right around a 5-point favorite, some locations as far as 9.5. You're looking at them right installed as slightly less than double digit favorites. Total 46.5 at betonline.ag. Booger, we've seen Miami at its absolute best in wins at home against Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. We've seen them look pretty lethargic, escaping Virginia in a hangover spot and then laying an absolute egg last weekend at Pittsburgh. You know, in your opinion, what is the real version of this Hurricanes team, and what should we expect against a stout defense like Clemson this weekend?
Man, I wish I knew. I think they've missed Mark Walton a little bit, although Homer's played well. Rozier has been inconsistent. They pulled him last week against Pittsburgh series. I didn't agree with that. I don't know if anybody really knows what this version is. I think they got great athletes on defense. Their front seven is really good. But they're going to have their hands full with Clemson. Their defense has got to play better. They got to get some stops to get off the field. If they can do that, then I think from an athlete standpoint, they can play with Clemson. Now, I think Clemson will win the game. I also think when Clemson's healthy, they're the best team in the country. So, although I like Miami, I think Miami's best year is probably next year. I think they're a year ahead. And I think you'll see just a little bit of a difference between talent and maturity when you see these two teams play.
From Miami's perspective, do you think them coming in saddled with the first loss takes some of the pressure off of them, knowing that Clemson has been here, done that, that they maybe come in a little free and easier, knowing, you know what, we got nothing to lose in this spot. As you mentioned, a year ahead of schedule. I think any Canes fan, if you gave them this type of scenario before the season, they'd have gone, where do I sign on the dotted line that we were one game away, albeit needing to pull off a little bit of an upset to get to the college football playoff?
Yeah, nobody thinks like that. Right now, Miami's not thinking that way. This is for me on the outside looking in. Everybody in that locker room is thinking really simple. We win, we go to the playoffs. So they're not thinking about next year. All they're thinking about is they're the better team. If they play their game, they'll be able to win. So, you know, for us guys who talk a lot on the outside, you know, we can come up with all these different bad games that teams play. And guys, it's really simple. When that ball is snapped, these 18 to 22-year-old kids, man, they're out there trying to win the game and play their best. And I fully expect Miami to do the same thing. And, you know, whether they – have zero losses or one loss, they know what opportunity is in front of them. You win this game, you have an opportunity to play for a national championship. It's that simple.
Hey, I mean, you know these guys better than we do. I mean, having played the game. So looking forward to seeing what unfolds and ultimately when the Sunday unveilings come out to get your thoughts on how that college football playoff stuff will look. Folks can follow him on Twitter at ESPN Booger. Booger, we know you're a busy man this time of year. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us on the Bet the Board podcast this morning.
Anytime, man. Y'all have a good one.
Some interesting thoughts, Payne, from Booger. I know he is a man pressed for time, so wanted to get, you know, his initial take on three of the bigger matchups there. I think most fascinating talking about Miami. He thinks, you know, as I guess it makes sense, they're going in with very realistic expectations that they can upset Clemson and kind of change the pecking order and hierarchy of the ACC. Whereas I'm kind of the mindset, I've been in locker rooms, never playing for a game of this magnitude, going, you know what? Let's go in there loose, carefree and easy. If we win, great. We're going to be disappointed if we lose, but no expectations heaped on our shoulders sometimes make it easier to go out there and play your best.
Miami players hear what people have been saying. They know this is actually the program changing when they need to put them back on the map. But you're right, they're a year ahead of schedule. But as players, that's not how they're thinking. And the report I got was Rozier had the best practice this week, all season. There was no pouting, no dropping of the head. He came out confident, loud. His hair was on fire, apparently, on Sunday's practice. That quick turnaround, Tuesday's practice was fantastic. So just from what I have been hearing, Miami, whatever they are, that was the best version of them at practice this week. They've quietly talked about going a little bit more up-tempo. The bigger thing, it just appears that if Rick is smart here, and we've seen it in the bigger games, he's going to run Rozier a bunch. The loss of Walton is really starting to rear its head this late in the season. So I think we're going to see, and you have to, right? Rozier's completing 55% of his passes this year. He's got to be a factor in the ground game.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And like you said, we're going to get Miami at its best. The real question in the room is, what is Miami at its best? And judging by the market that's really taken off from Clemson, you know, under a touchdown favorite, ballooning out to nearly double digits, the market thinks that they're going to have their work cut out for them. And I want to come back to this game, but we may as well finish up our handicap of the ACC Championship. Of course, we'll get to the Big Ten, we'll get to the Pac-12 in greater detail, but do want to circle back on some of the stuff that we touched on with Booger in regards to the SEC and ACC. When we look at the statistical comparison between these two teams, Payne, Clemson, number four in the country in terms of yards per play defense at 4.2. Miami, not a slouch in that department either, number 10 at 4.5 yards per carry. We know they've been the beneficiary of playing a lot of their games at home. When you see this game playing out, is it Miami's defense that has to be at its best more so than their offense for them to pull off this upset?
It's possible. listen, you know, we've thought that front four is a little overrated. Yes, they create a ton of havoc plays. Yes, they create some turnovers. They get up the field, a lot of plays for losses. But they do give up a lot of decent-sized runs. They're not that overly imposing in the trenches. And I think that's where Clemson's going to have some success. I know the Clemson offense isn't overly explosive, but it's, hey, stay ahead of the chains, create that mismatch with Kelly Bryant running. It becomes another man in the box, so to speak. The big thing for me here is I actually think it's Miami's offensive line. To me, one thing that I have seen, and it stood out all season, it's been an issue for the last few years, is I'm not sure how great their offensive line is. They're going to have to somehow stalemate, keep that matchup respectable against Clemson's defensive line. And so when I started to dig into that, Miami offensive line, they're not great. It's 40th in adjusted line yards. Their power running game is non-existent. They're 65th in the country in adjusted sack rate. I don't believe that's a great matchup against Clemson's dominating front four. That to me is the biggest matchup of this game. And I haven't been a Travis Homer fan all season. I get he's had some nice boom plays. He's had some great explosive plays. Not the most efficient runner. Walton is a huge loss here, and we're seeing that.
I will say, when we look at Miami and how they've run the football away from home, I think this further supports your talk about the offensive line being a major question mark. 83 yards rushing at Florida State. We know how that game ended in heroic fashion late for the Hurricanes to get out of Doak with a win. 59 yards rushing in a win against North Carolina that was very ugly, more or less, from start to finish. And then, of course, they followed up with a 45-yard rushing performance against Pittsburgh in their lone loss of the season last weekend. Of course, Miami will be without their second leading receiver and tight end Chris Herndon, 40 catches and 477 yards.
That's big.
Who replaces that productivity? Well, if you believe everything you've read, it's going to be Michael Irvin II. He of the 5 catches and 56 yards on the season. So Maybe we got playmaker part two coming through.
That's a significant loss. And just the note I got was that this is pretty big. And then I dug into that a little bit. That's Rozier's second favorite target behind Berrios. And when you start to look at like the catch rates, Herndon's got that big frame, the wide radius. 72% of Rozier's throws to Herndon are caught. Overall, again, Rozier's completing 55% of his passes. So
you don't got to be a math wizard to figure out what that story's telling you.
That was his security blanket. And I know Richards has come out this week and said, hey, he's had a disappointing sophomore season. Everyone thought he was going to be a huge boom guy. He was dealing with some ankle issues, but he's come out and said, hey, it's time for me to step up and be the man. We'll see if that unfolds. I don't know if Rozier's going to be the guy that can execute it. But there is some opportunities against that Clemson secondary. I know the metrics bear out and say it's fantastic. They were dealing with some injuries. A lot of those guys are back healthy, but they got depleted in that area. They can be had there just a little bit. Where's the number that is going to show some support for Miami?
I think if it gets to 10, I mean, anyone who wants to play Miami, there's no reason to jump in now. I mean, we've seen itchy trigger fingers from the pros in the past. Maybe they'll decide to gobble up 9.5 or buy to 10 at minus $1.20. But I think when you get to 10, you're going to see some support, especially from the guys that got out ahead of the market and had the ability to lay 5, 6, and 6.5 in this particular spot.
Can lay 5 and come back and take 10, I mean, you're sitting pretty in that spot. And again, this is going to be an all-in effort here from Miami, just based on the reports of practice have been fantastic. It's not guys that are going to feed me crap. But this number tells us all we need to know, right? It validates what I've been saying about Miami all season long.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. In Miami's best case scenario, in my opinion, I agree with the initial move we've seen on the under. I think that Miami's got to keep this game lower scoring, really value the football, and not be afraid to punt, forcing Clemson to go the length of the field with an offense that can look oftentimes one-dimensional, but you can't really put a price on some of their experience. The SEC game, Payne. We got Booger's thoughts initially on his main takeaway, obviously as a player who's been here. I mean, you look at what Kirby Smart's done. He was part of the 2011 Alabama team that lost 9-6 during the regular season, came back to win the title 21-0. But as Booger alluded to, Georgia's offensive line ain't going to get that much better overnight. Emotion's only going to take you so far. So I wanted to get your take on the number and what this tells you about change in perception that Auburn goes from a 3-point underdog when they hosted this game to now being, we'll call it a 2, 2.5 point favorite on a neutral field. The power numbers suggest that, or, you know, what should we take away from what the market has told us on this game?
Steep move, and it's understandable. And this is an Auburn team that we have loved all year. If you've been listening, we've power rated Auburn higher than just about everyone else. They beat Alabama by double digits. They beat this very Georgia team, and they dominate. I was looking at that. They dominated that game over 3 yards per play better the first go round. And so when you factor all that in, I can see this is going to be a perception week. There's going to be a lot of money here. And I've heard people recently say, like, hey, the public doesn't have their say. This is the week where they're going to have their say. And we see it with this number. Now, when we factor everything in, this may sound crazy to some, Georgia's about a 1.5 point favorite by our power numbers. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Kerryon Johnson, he says he's playing. And if you've done some digging into this, he had shoulder surgery as a freshman. Is he going to be 100%? I would say that's extremely doubtful. And now
he will be until he gets hit.
That's exactly it. Now he's going against a big boy defense in Georgia with high-end SEC caliber players, and they're going to be playing on Sundays. And listen, this isn't the Powder Puff League, and I'm just going to shoot it to you straight. Kirby Smart, their defensive coordinator, every single player is going to be gunning right for his shoulder. And we saw in the Bama game, they took Kerryon out, shot him up under the tent. That didn't help. So what will be interesting here is when Kerryon Johnson is likely officially announced in, what does that do to the screen? It's going to pop up on the screen. Does it go to 3? Who knows? But if it does, there's a ton of value in that number because we know at this point, I would say Kerryon Johnson's one good hit away from potentially coming out in that game. And for us, you know, probably extremely stupid not just grabbing 3. This was a game that was never going to 3.5. Grab the 3 for half a position early. Come back, figure it out later. But, hey, we may have a shot. It looks like the tickets are in Auburn's favor. And if that hits the screen, that Kerryon Johnson, who's questionable, hits the screen and says, hey, he's playing, that's going to do something to this number as well.
There's no doubt about it. And when you look at Georgia, I mean, this is a team who's kind of struggled against the run over their last 3 games. Allowed 237 on a loss to Auburn, 124 yards in a win against Kentucky, and 188 yards on the ground last week against Georgia Tech. Auburn remains the only team on Georgia's schedule this season to gain more than 320 yards. One last note on this game, Payne, that I found interesting as part of my sleepless nights. This is the 7th revenge matchup in a conference title game. In the previous 6 iterations, 5 of those have been won by the team that won the regular season matchup. The lone exception coming back in 2001 when LSU lost in the regular season but won the title game. However, all other rematches have come at least 7 weeks apart. So TCU, Oklahoma, this matchup here, very interesting to see the level of familiarity that these teams were more or less, I don't want to say mirror images of what we saw just a few short weeks ago, but a lot different than when you have, you know, 7-8 weeks between previous meetings, which leads us perfectly to TCU against Oklahoma. We got Booger's take on what you have to do to kind of slow down Baker Mayfield, and he said TCU's defense is going to have to be up to the task. But I ask you quite honestly, do we think the Horned Frogs, if this game does turn into a shootout, have enough firepower, maybe not to win this game outright, but to cover a 7-point underdogs?
Enough firepower offensively? Probably not.
That's what I was getting at. I mean, this has been what I would call a pop gun offense in some of the times I've watched him as far as balance is concerned.
This is so tough, right? And when you look offensively, it's TCU's offense, 5.9 yards per play against Baylor's 94th ranked defense. Even more concerning, you know, after you see Oklahoma, what they do as Darius Anderson gets injured. They didn't have him for the Texas Tech game. 4.6 yards per play offensively for TCU in that game against, again, the Red Raiders, who are 91st in defensive efficiency. This is such a tough game for me. And when you look at the number, when you talk to a lot of professionals, when you know where this market's going to go, this usually is the spot that makes professional bettors profitable long term. At this number, if the game was played 1,000 times, 10,000 times, it's likely a 55% play taking TCU plus the points. And we have seen that already. Professional bettors have gobbled the hook. Those are now gone. And 80% of the tickets on Oklahoma here. And you start to just talk about this number. power-wise, probably should be four. Pros ran to take, and we were part of this mess. Six and a half, seven.
We had egg on our face.
Yeah. Ran to take 6.5-7 on TCU in Norman. Now you're getting 7.5 in Dallas, Texas. I personally have not bet it yet, and Booger hit this precisely. This was going to be one of my biggest points, and this is, again, what scares me. TCU's defense has given up the big play. 120th in the country in explosive play defense. You can rewind the tape. Every time we've talked about TCU on this podcast this year, it's the explosive play defense that concerns us. And it's in the secondary as well. TCU, 92nd in the country in explosive pass defense. TCU gave up 9 explosive plays in the first half at Oklahoma a few weeks ago. And this leads to your point, which is perfect. I don't think they have the offense that's able to play catch up here, right? I mean, the big concern we have is Kenny Hill. Always has been. And when you're trying to, I guess, slay Baker Mayfield, the big dragon, and you have Kenny Hill, you're showing up with like a slingshot and a couple pebbles.
I mean, David did beat Goliath at least once for those folks familiar with the Bible.
That is true. That is true. And again, Darius Anderson. That is a huge loss here. Hicks is nice. He's not the between the tackles runner. He's better if you can get him out in space, catching the ball. That's a big loss. The other thing I saw was for this TCU secondary, what's the kid's name? He's suspended for the first half of this game.
And you know what? I didn't put his name down in my notes. I did some reading and saw, you know, they're going to be down one of their cogs back there in the defensive backfield.
Yeah. Apparently, he was throwing a couple haymakers during that melee against Baylor. And Nick Orr, the starting safety, is going to be suspended for the first half. They do get Matt Boson back in this game. He leads the Big 12 in sacks with 11.5. So, you know, maybe that's the way. I just don't, as good as TCU's defense is, I just don't know how much you can prevent Oklahoma from scoring. And I didn't get a chance. I knew the game was over the first go around. I turned it off. And then the next morning I woke up and saw that TCU had shut out Oklahoma in the second half. Did you see the whole game? Oklahoma taking their foot off the pedal?
Yeah, they took their foot off the pedal. I didn't watch every single play as intently as I did in the first half, but it was a lot of run. Very similar to what we saw Oklahoma do against Texas Tech when they just kind of bled the clock down. It looked like Oklahoma realized, all right, we've done enough here. We don't think TCU can do enough offensively to really put some fear into us, took their foot off the gas and went kind of vanilla. So I wouldn't read too much into that.
That's the biggest thing here. I just don't know what TCU's offense can do. Now, again, TCU is going to be the professional side. But when you're without Darius Anderson, Kenny Hill's right now their number two runner.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. And hey, we say it all the time and we talk about it, whether it's the NFL or college. We're going to tell you where that professional money is, but not all the time does it mean it's an endorsement for trying to back some of these particular teams. If you take that sniper approach, more so than spraying the board of the shotgun, trusting your numbers and betting it blindly. So an interesting matchup here, I think, contingent on TCU's ability to keep up offensively. But for me, Payne, if TCU is going to be the side, I really have to believe this game would come in under the total. I'm not running to the window to bet a side or total by any stretch of the imagination, but just kind of you know, my initial thoughts as I've done my handicapping and reading here.
Only way that TCU has a shot here to win, let's forget about the cover part, only shot they have to win is to make this a low-scoring game. And that was, I think, probably the most astute point that Booger made when he came on. It was, listen, Oklahoma State's got a fantastic offense. They were at home. They still couldn't outsling Oklahoma. So TCU certainly isn't going to be able to. It's got to be a defensive effort here from Gary Patterson.
That's what Patterson is known for, to be able to try and get his teams focused and ready to roll, but should be a great way to kick off championship Saturday. Into one of the nightcaps where it's Ohio State taking on Wisconsin in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium. You're looking at the Badgers right now paying a 6.5-point, underdog. Total on this game, 51.5 at betonline.ag. And first place to start, fair or foul, with Ohio State being installed as this heavy a favorite, because I have some skepticism, and I think a lot of the college football world does, about what Wisconsin's shown us and been able to accomplish despite going undefeated during the regular season.
It's probably a touch short. And I understand it, right? Books open this early. There's questions about JT Barrett's health. Now, at this point, we see there's a lot of public sentiment for Wisconsin. You don't need to go there 2-7 quite yet. If this continues to tick up, tells you everything you need to know. And that would be that professional money has come in on Ohio State and will likely do so as it continues to potentially go up. I would think we will see a regular 7 in the market. These games are so tough for me because is this the 8 o'clock game, right?
Yeah, this is the late game. And we have no get out games this weekend. So all you have is the late games kicking off at 8 Eastern.
Yeah, it's paired with Miami Clemson. So, you know, it won't be a standalone. But again, the public's going to have their say this week. This is the fun matchup because I want to see where this number goes because this is your public versus professional again. And we know how bad the schedule is for Wisconsin, right? Everyone in the world knows that. What scares me about this game is I feel like this is going to be a game where I live bet. You're going to know pretty damn early if Wisconsin has a chance. That's how I view this. You're going to know if they have the horses to compete or not pretty damn early in this game.
I mean, I just try and play this game out. And I mean, yeah. I've looked at all the metrics. We've gone through Wisconsin's strength to schedule as far as opposing offenses. The only team that they've played in the top 25, Florida Atlantic, but that was way back in week two before Lane Kiffin had been able to put his fingerprints all over that particular program. And you look at the Badgers. We know they're going to have to run the ball with their talented running back. I mean, that's how things are going to work. Taylor can't get on track. It's going to be an ugly, ugly football game. We've seen Ohio State susceptible to play action pass. I mean, for stretches against Michigan last weekend, John Elkorn did have some success. It was a fateful dropped interception that maybe Michigan could have put a stranglehold on that football game. But we've seen the Buckeyes at its best against the likes of Michigan State and some of the dregs. So hard for me to try and figure out how Wisconsin's going to be able to move the ball consistently enough if Ohio State gets on track, and I think Wisconsin's defense can be broken with athletes in space. I'm just not sure that JT Barrett is smart enough to be able to do it if they run this vanilla game plan and try and run the ball between the tackles right from the opening kickoff.
You can still confuse JT Barrett, and Jim Leonard is as damn good as it gets. This Wisconsin defense has dealt with some injuries throughout the course of this season. The looks he gives as a former, you know, safety in the secondary. I mean, he's going to have a head coaching job here pretty quickly. I think he can confuse JT Barrett a little bit. Let's see what JT Barrett we get. We're not quite sure here. Now, for Wisconsin, like, again, they're going to have to be able to run it. They're going to have to run it a lot.
Will they be able to run it, though? I mean, with no real threat in the passing game, do you think Wisconsin can run the ball enough to keep Ohio State honest?
I don't know what honest is. Is 4 yards per carry enough? I think so. Like this.
Yeah, if they can do 4 yards per carry, I think that puts Wisconsin in a pretty good spot as long as they're able to stay ahead of the chains.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. Jonathan Taylor is averaging 7 yards per carry this year. He's successful on 48% of his runs. I get how great that Ohio State defensive front is, but they can be had a little bit. They play bully. Michigan punched him in the mouth early on last week. That's how you have to beat the bully. They didn't have enough to go off of that, right? There wasn't a good enough passing game, but there were guys streaking wide open. Again, this is a game that I'm probably going to be live betting because you're going to know early on if the athletes are too much for Wisconsin, what kind of JT Barrett you're likely going to get fairly early on in this game, if some of the coverages are too confusing for JT Barrett to digest. So for me, again, and we're probably both dumb, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we're like, oh, Ohio State's a burial. And it opens 5. We probably should have got out ahead at that number because it is a little short and then figure out what to do with it later. But now at this point, at 6.5, there's some soft 7 creeping into the market. I am likely to just live bet this game. Again, you are going to know very quickly, very, very quickly. And if Ohio State gets up, it's going to be tough for Wisconsin to play catch up.
You're not predicting a 59-0 drubbing like we saw at the hands of Cardale Jones a few short years ago?
I don't know. This Ohio State team is so weird to me.
You mean, if by weird you mean extremely inconsistent and erratic, then yes, I would echo those exact same thoughts.
Yeah, and we've kind of joked about this off air. Like, I've been bamboozled by JT Barrett far too much. And
don't let him piss on my head and tell me it's raining.
He had the fantastic comeback against Penn State, and there were a lot of ancillary issues on why and how Penn State got out early in that game. But again, Ohio State didn't cover it, and we got egg on our face, and then we're open and honest about everything. And when you win enough, you can be. You don't need to sugarcoat it. We were on Ohio State at Iowa.
Oh, low point of my college football season.
And I kid you not, I turned the game after off after one play, and I said, hey, this is the JT Barrett we're going to get today. And so, again, I'm probably not going to invest pregame, but this is one I'm definitely going to live trade.
A couple numbers to keep in mind for folks out there breaking down the game. Ohio State's defense has held every conference opponent, not named the Iowa Hawkeyes, to 117 rushing yards or less. When you look at Wisconsin on the other side and the way they want to move the football, no surprise they want to run the ball. They've only thrown for more than 200 yards one time in a conference game. No Quintus Cephas. Troy Fumagalli hasn't caught more than three passes in a game since October 21st, a game against Maryland. And oh, by the way, Alex Hornibrook intercepted in eight straight games before the season finale against the Minnesota Gophers, who have heaps of issues of their own.
Numbers ticking to a natural seven as we talk.
What'd you say?
Number creeping to closer to a natural seven as we talk.
Great, great, great stuff right here. Just what I want to hear as I watch the markets in Vegas still hold a six, so I may be able to lay it. But a lot like you, I really want to see what I get from Ohio State early on to know if they're fully engaged and think that they can put together that signature performance to catch the eye of the college football playoff committee. Friday night, a nice little appetizer for the weekend. I don't think either of these teams is going to factor into the college football playoff discussion, but USC, a chance to get healthy at the right time. They're 4-point favorites up in Santa Clara, taking on Stanford for Pac-12 supremacy. Total in this game, 58.5 at betonline.ag. And Payne, it has not been a kind title game scenario to teams hailing from the Pac-12 South. It's been a game dominated by the North, but the only time we saw these teams meet this season, USC 42-24 winner. Outgained the Cardinals 623-324. But unlike TCU Oklahoma, unlike Auburn Georgia, that was way back when these two teams were trying to figure out who they were going to be in the 2017 season.
And they've changed a lot. Stanford's defense appears to be improving slightly. The season-long metrics still are not great. It's not going to be an elite defense by any stretch, but they did hold Notre Dame under the national average of yards per rush attempt, which was a positive sign. I think this is a slightly better defensive unit for Stanford than USC saw back in early September. And I think the biggest one, and I've been clamoring for this for a while, is KJ Costello. Like, he's clearly their future. He's more talented, and he's better at this very moment than Keller Christ. It's just tough to have a quarterback when you look at these numbers that are completing 54% of his passes, and that's what Christ was doing. Costello, now over 61%. So this is going to be a better version of Stanford. Is it enough is the big question. You know, Bryce Love at this point, obviously not 100%. He's playing through it. Now the short week doesn't help, right? You get the late Saturday game, now the Friday turnaround. USC, been dealing with injuries all season. They had the bye week. I think that was extremely helpful, not just from preparation, but from the health standpoint. And we remember when we were talking about this team, when were they faced? I think they were going to Notre Dame. And we just said
they were about ready to hit a wall.
They were about ready to hit a wall. You looked at the injury report. There's 30 guys on the injury report that were questionable for that week or out. You look this week, it's cut in half. And most of the guys that aren't out for the season that are questionable for this game, it looks like they're trending towards playing. So that's the big thing here. Athlete-wise, this is such a tough game because the number is a little high. It's trending towards being a little high. We had it, I would say, I think off the top of my head, it was USC -3, -20 or soft 3.5, whichever we felt comfortable with using there. And I would think is going to tick up a little bit. This is a standalone primetime game, Friday night. The higher this gets, it's going to entice some pro money. But the athlete advantage is what scares me just a touch here.
And you mentioned USC getting healthy. I mean, this is going to be the first time we've seen a Power 5 conference opponent in a title game come into that game off a bye since Auburn and Oklahoma had that luxury way back in 2004. So a little bit of a unique scenario there. Fortunately, and I will say this, if you're the Pac-12, you're almost happy that it's Stanford playing in this game because they don't have to travel. You want to talk about a team that would have been a real disadvantage with Washington State having one day less to have to travel after USC came in rested. So they dodge a little bit of a bullet there. You're exactly right when you talk about the athletes, and wanted to get your take real quick before we close the book here on the total at 59.
I'd rather have had that matchup, by the way.
Oh, you had that matchup with revenge. Fun. I'd have been more than happy to lay USC, and I say this part facetiously. I'd be more than happy to lay double digits in that kind of scenario.
We were hoping.
Yeah, I'd have been more than happy. Well, we pretty much knew, as we alluded to on the podcast, though, last week, that given the Apple Cup number, we would have been absolutely shocked if Washington State did what they needed to in Seattle to try and get through. So hopefully, folks, speaking of trendy underdogs, didn't get bamboozled into backing the Cougs there. Again, that was over at the end of the first. Total-wise at 59, do we think we see any movement trending up with the standalone scenario, public money or otherwise, knowing that these two teams, USC, more than happy to try and get out there and score, and Stanford opening up their offense a bit?
We've already seen that move just a touch. Oddly, though, I feel like the real position is going to end up being under. I won't be on this total, I don't believe. But just kind of what I'm hearing and seeing on the back ends. If I could
will
put
be interesting
that as honestly as possible.
Yeah, to try and see where this game goes. I mean, you look at these two teams from a yard per play standpoint. Offensively, both teams in the top 20. SC at number 14, Stanford 17. Yards per play defense, Stanford actually a touch worse than the Trojans, checking in at number 70. USC at number 60. Last thing on this game, coaching edge starkly in favor of Stanford here in this spot?
I would think so, yeah. Now, Shaw was a little slow making the switch to Costello. But eventually he made it, and as you alluded to, that was a good point by you. He's talked about in some of his losses being far too conservative as a play caller, and he's vowed to be more aggressive. It's probably why this is ticking up a little bit. It's why the Washington game ticked up a ton.
Yeah, he was pretty conservative, though, I will say, last week against Notre Dame until he was really forced to throw the football around. And then you saw things open up for this Cardinal offense. And more importantly, for Bryce Love getting on track running the football in the second half.
Yeah, that's what makes it tough when you're starting to go over a number that's trending towards 60 is Bryce Love's not 100%. USC's defense getting just a touch bit healthier. You kind of know at this point what both teams want to do. You've seen it once already. I would eventually think whether it hits the screen or not, there'll be professional money on this under.
Well, we've talked about all the games, Payne. We've given our thoughts. We've gotten Booger's take on a couple of the marquee matchups. But more importantly, I think a lot of our listeners want to know what the books are thinking on some of these spots.
You hear his voice every Wednesday and Thursday on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, first things first, I mean, is your Bitcoin boner at full mast when we talk college football this morning?
Oh, Jesus. You're starting out the sexual harassment right from the get-go. My God. I mean, all these sexual harassment suits all over the internet now, man. You're digging right in from the get-go. But, yeah, to answer your question, yes. Yes. Hey, Payne, send me your human resources link when you got a chance. I got a contact. I got to talk to them. Bet the Board Human Bet the Board Human Resources. They have to have a Twitter account. I talk to them.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have to create a new Twitter handle and email address. I'm not quite sure how quickly you'll get a response, but you know, we'll put one together for you, Dave, so you feel more comfortable, and this creates a safe space. But you know what? I mean, all things being equal – the NFL apparently probably hasn't been a safe space. We'll get your take on the recent run of favorites going back to week 7 tomorrow. But how has college football worked out for you guys on the whole so far this season?
It's been great. I mean, we had another great weekend this past weekend. I mean, it's been – thank God. Because, I mean, it was anything close to NFL over the last month and a half or whatever. I mean, good Lord. I don't know what I'd be doing right now. But, no, college is awesome, and it's great again this past weekend. Good were Mississippi, Arkansas, Pitt, Cal, Michigan – bad, what, TCU, Georgia, Michigan State, Penn State. But no complaints at all. I mean, the action's been great, and we're expecting a huge weekend this weekend. A lot of action coming in.
I mean, in addition to obviously the action that you have on regular games, totals, halftimes, et cetera, I mean, you guys have been kind of at the forefront hanging coaching odds. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen through some of this chaos with the Tennessee coaching search, you know, what Florida's decision to hire Dan Mullen look like, and maybe what the action initially has been like as Arkansas tries to figure out who's going to replace Brett Bielema down there in Fayetteville?
Right. No, they're a lot of fun to hang. They're a real challenge to hang. I mean, you know, these rumors come in and you don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, you have the same rumors pretty much as all the bettors have. And, you know, our guys are managing so much other stuff that it's so hard just to pay attention to what the hell's going on in Tennessee. Not that anybody knows, it looks like. But, yeah, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example with the Arkansas. Before their game last this past weekend, some guy signs up from Arkansas, new account, and bets Gus Malzahn four times at plus 200. So, I mean, that catches our guys' eyes, you know what I mean? Some new account, betting Gus Malzahn four times over and over again. I mean, you there's so much information out there, inside information or whatever, that you got to respect something like that. So that's the challenge. So we dropped him immediately to the plus 100 favor, and we reopened it last night. He's now plus 160 because obviously him playing in the championship game this weekend correlates the decision there. Mike Norvell's plus 300. But as far as Florida is concerned, yeah, that was good for the house. The money was on Scott Frost and Chip Kelly. So that was a good one. And Tim Tebow too, but we probably weren't sweating that one. I mean, people love the long shots, man. We could put Todd Furman up there at 100-1. Someone's going to bet it. I guarantee it.
You might have to add a couple extra zeros if I'm going to get a head coaching job anywhere. But, you know, even my alma mater wouldn't consider me to coach Division III football at this point in my life.
Right, but someone would bet it, I guarantee it. But yeah, that Tennessee, I mean, you know, yeah, everybody's been listening to me bitch and whine about John Gruden over the last few weeks, and that's dead in the water. Thank God. That would have been a huge kick in the nuts. But yeah, we're gonna probably reopen those. Like, we were gonna open them yesterday, but with all that, it looked like Mike Gundy was gonna get, you know, interviewing. So when something like that happens, you know, you gotta freeze them. So, yeah, they're frozen right now, and we're going to look to explore opening those up since Mike Gundy said no, and I think everybody's saying no. Maybe you do have a shot at Tennessee there, Furman. I don't know.
There's three of us. There's a good chance. I mean, one of us can make a call to some of our friends in Nashville and see if they can move our name to the top of the list. I can't imagine there's a Jimmy Sexton client out there that's running to take this job, but when we look at some of the liabilities obviously created there, Dave, I mean – as far as teams that are actually still playing for something instead of trying to figure out their leader going forward, what have you seen as far as the Power Five conferences? I mean, are there certain teams you guys are rooting for going way back to the college football futures that you hung early in the season?
From the future standpoint, we're in the red on teams with a realistic shot. We're in the red on Ohio State would be a big loss for us, and Georgia would be a decent size loss. Everybody else is a profit, a nice profit. No huge profits out there, but profits about us the size of Georgia losing. So they're all right there, the same, that same kind of profit. Conference winners, we got some interesting sweats there. You know, and for the SEC, for the Auburn would be a win for us for the conference winner. Georgia would be a loss. Pac-12, USC would be a win. Stanford would be a small loss. Big Ten, Ohio State would be a win. Wisconsin break even. Big 12, Oklahoma's a win. TCU, a very small win. And ACC, Miami, a moderate loss, while Clemson would be a moderate win. So all sorts of good stuff going there. You know, you might win some in the spread, but you lose in the futures, and it gets kind of confusing on a weekend like this for us.
Conference championship weekday, a lot of big games, probably a ton of action for the house. Any public or professional action so far?
Not a ton of professional yet, and that's going to come piling in. Like I said, the last few weeks, it's not coming in as early as it used to. A little later in the season, it tightens up a little bit, but that'll pile in. But we've seen Florida Atlantic -10.5, Troy +1.5, USC -3, that's up to -4. So that's just sharper stuff. But again, follow my Twitter. I'll be tweeting them out later in the week. Public, tons of sweats, those big five games. USC, 65% of the bettors. Auburn, 71%. Clemson, 60%. Wisconsin is the lone dog at 65%. And it's looking like Oklahoma, TCU will be the biggest sweat of the day with 87% of the early bettors on the Sooners. So, yeah, it's going to be a good weekend. I love this weekend. Conference championship weekend is always a lot of fun.
Always interesting to see some of the best team lock horns. And like we hit on at the top of the show, this is the first time in the history of this kind of format, Dave, where you have four top 10 matchups. So we can only imagine betting handle will correspond to that. And for some of the folks that we'll call them Johnny come latelys that may not have money with you guys at betonline.ag, what can they expect as far as promotions being loyal Bet the Board listeners?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, head on over to betonline.ag, sign up for an account. Use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account but you have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.com. betonline.ag/bettheboard. And yes, we accept Bitcoin on your deposits. Ethereum too. So, you know, Ethereum's going through the roof too. So if you're in Ethereum, we'll take that as well.
Look at that. A man of the people over there sharing intel on Twitter, or you can follow him at all times at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, go take care of that Bitcoin boner, and we'll talk to you about some college football this time next week, hopefully.
Yeah, right. Give me that human resources number there, Payne, would you?
Payne, I'm a little bit worried if Dave's going to go to HR. Am I going to have to find myself a labor lawyer so I don't get kicked off this podcast as part of our Bet the Board LLC or whatever we call ourselves these days?
I figured you'd already have one.
Well, I mean, I'm not a high profile politician or anything along those lines, so I try and keep a squeaky clean reputation as best I can.
Got to have one in the family.
I mean, are you trying to imply something given my ethnic heritage?
No, I would figure you'd have one in the family.
I mean, we do have a couple in the family.
We do have a couple in the family,
more so on the entertainment side, but I digress.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you have one on the entertainment side, they deal with all that stuff, right?
I think I have, you know what? I think one of my best friend's parents is a labor lawyer. So, you know, I'll keep them on retainer. I'm not quite sure how things will work across, you know, international borders.
Lots of harassment stuff going on.
Yeah, a lot of it. Apparently, Dave might be looking for a payday. He must think that, you know, I'm apparently well off enough that he can come chasing after me. You figure with his Bitcoin boner, he'd be in a good mood.
Yeah. Well, Bitcoin is on the run, so he probably thinks you're loaded.
Yeah, not quite the case. You can only spend one coin so well. You can only spread one coin so far. But either way, when it comes to the college football shenanigans, I think we've done a fine job for our inaugural season of the Bet the Board College Football Podcast, no?
It was profitable.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. The big question I have for you, and we haven't discussed, I mean, do we come back with a little bit of a teaser-type podcast for bowl season once we know these numbers for the big games? And then we'll obviously unveil the holiday recording schedule later on.
We're definitely doing a bowl podcast. That's without question. Let's see my sleeping arrangement. Let's see how that bodes.
All right. We'll figure all that stuff out then. So obviously, as we tell you folks, for some of the announcements that we can't make here on the podcast itself, make sure that you are following at Bet the Board Twitter account. Obviously, NFL schedule as normal, Mondays and Thursdays until we wrap up the regular season. But Payne, before we shift gears to the National Football League and whatever the hell week we're in, 13, tomorrow, where are we going from an investment perspective on Championship Saturday?
Tough. This is a tough one. There's five games to pick from.
I know we're not betting Oklahoma. I know that.
No.
Well, you know, there are more than five games. I mean, for those folks that wanted to group of five breakdowns. Memphis, UCF, I mean, my number's pretty close. They're actually probably a little bit light with UCF there. North Texas in the lane train, I didn't see a whole heck of a lot. And we were not about to delve into Sun Belt football and open that Pandora's box. No, there was no Sun Belt discussion. Never once did I want to try and talk about a breakdown. I have no problem betting a Sun Belt game, but the day I get on this podcast and we're dissecting South Alabama against Georgia State, that may be time for me to check myself into the Get a Life clinic.
Just the thought that those two games could potentially get steamed.
I mean, you saw what I did there. I mean, I tried to at least peel back the curtain a drop.
There you go. All right, let's go with the big game. Georgia-Auburn.
Oh, I thought you were going to try and give out a play on Florida State-Louisiana-Monroe.
Could be tough with a man leaving town.
The train is leaving the station.
We'll see. We'll see how that unfolds. My feeling is that's got to come down pretty soon. He's been given an ultimatum. Before we go too far off the tracks, let's go with Georgia.
Are we telling listeners to try and wait this game out as long as possible to grab that three with Kerryon Johnson's status potentially getting or should be getting upgraded?
So this is what I would do. I would buy to three. I would nibble a little bit now. I would take just a little nibble. And then I would reassess and wait for that news to come down. And then I would look to re-add if he is, in fact, upgraded to in. I think you'll get a better number, but you don't want to lose the opportunity for three. So that's how I would handle this. No need to be pigs. It's been a profitable season. Grab a little Georgia plus three on the bye, then reassess.
It's the name of the game. It's putting one winners. It's chipping away at that man's balance sheet. Lining your pockets, not going whole hog, to use your pig analogy there. But I think a good opportunity. I would echo your same sentiments that Georgia should be the favorite in this particular game. Be very interesting to see how these things unfold and what kind of schematic advantages Kirby Smart can give his offense that for large stretches at Jordan-Hare a few short weeks ago looked outmatched, out-physicaled at the point of contact. But big, fat, and happy, not always a good look. And I think we saw some of that with Georgia having a target on their back, Auburn playing a chip on their shoulder. Those roles should be reversed come Saturday at the Mercedes-Benz Center, whatever the fuck they call it these days.
First down is going to be the big down. Neither of these offenses are going to be consistent if they're forced in third and long. And that'll be the big adjustment here. And I think Malzahn did a better job in game one, getting the ball out of Stidham's hands early. When I broke down this game a little bit, Kirby Smart did not. He ran 9 of 12 times on first down in the first half. I think you're going to have to get it out of Fromm's hands just a little bit early and see how that progresses, see if that game plan goes. Now, Stidham does scare me a little bit. He's really progressing. I think he's completed 72% of his passes since the LSU game.
Yeah, he's looked a lot better, much more good. Like the quarterback that thrived under Art Briles' leadership in Waco.
Last week was a real physical game for Auburn, and it was at home, and it's easy to get things rolling. I don't think it'll be as easy this week. And we were on Auburn in the first go-round. That was a game we gave out here on the podcast, Auburn +3. To start that game, it looked a little dicey, and there was opportunities there for Georgia to change things a little bit. They missed on a trick play. There's a couple questionable calls in the secondary that would have led them into plus territory. There's a couple fizzle outs deep in Auburn territory. And then the game started to snowball a little bit. I just think it's a little different this go around. And Kerryon Johnson, that would just be a huge loss because we know, right? Pettaway's out for this game for sure. The backup last week tweaked his ankle a little bit. Kerryon Johnson right now appears to be this offense. He's not 100%. That's a huge blow.
Just ask the Dallas Cowboys how difficult it can be when you go and try and move the football on offense without your bell cow. So the Georgia Bulldogs, enough to get bet the board to the window for championship Saturday. Be prudent with those investments. And as we said, we'll figure out some parting shots and or a schedule for the college football postseason to make sure we equip people with the proper tools to win their pools and, more importantly, win bets. Payne?
For sure.
Good deal. Always a pleasure. Special thanks to Dave Mason, who joins us every week, and also Booger McFarland. Know he was a busy man, so carving out some time, greatly appreciative of that. Check him out as part of the college football playoff coverage over the next over the next 4 or 5 weeks, but obviously on Sunday morning when we know the four teams that'll be competing for the highest honor in the land. In the interim, get those Georgia tickets, get to the window, and we'll see you right there as we cash with an SEC championship game winner.